and all that information off the world wide web.
That's the thing. It's about the past, but it's also about the future. Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. I've talked myself out here before we even start.
I have started.
There's
15 customers.
Oh, no, I do all these shits myself. I'm in that library.
So, well, listeners will have noticed that Vic is not here, but we do have Billy George.
We do indeed. Right,
welcome to the podcast, mate.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
So thank you very much for getting out of your bed early, even before the milkman.
The only time I'm up at this time on a Monday, John, is when I'm getting in.
Historically.
Yeah. You've done very well to get me out of my bed at 6 o'clock on the Monday morning.
That's a tick.
So you've been, I would say, from my point of view, you are kind of the man of Dunfermline, and that's what I see it, because you're everywhere. The media platforms. No, it's a great thing. It's the media platforms, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, all these things. But you're also creating a lot for Dunfermline, and I don't know if a lot of people know the background of you and where you started your journey. You know, rewind, you know, 20 years ago. When you were...
Maybe longer than that, Johnny. I'm actually 60 now, probably.
60?
The big 60. Last August.
Where did it start for you then?
Well, I was always a wee bit of a sort of kind of lost soul in my 20s, because I went to the dockyard. I was 5 years in there. I did an apprenticeship, fitter turner, and I was just hopeless. You know, it was not me. In contrast, my brother was a year behind me, and he's still in the dockyard. He's a manager, same trade, but he was more suited to it. Eh? Mm-hmm. So I had this crazy idea of becoming a teacher then. So I left the dockyard 1986, went to Murray House College of Education and did a 4-year degree on primary school teaching.
All right, okay.
A degree, a B.Ed. So I eventually got through that with... a few mishaps along the way, particularly towards the end, when I had to repeat a part of the course because a placement, so it was tough. So I thought, I'll give myself some time and I'll maybe go back to it, but I never did. Ended up running a pub for a year or so. And then my mother phoned me up one day, says, there's a book going with the co-op insurance, son. I was like, what's that? Well, you're getting that boy, Alec, it's been coming to your house for God knows how many years. Well, that's what he does. And so I got an interview with a manager called Bob Hope, believe it or not. Got the job, and then the exams came in. So the financial planning certificate came in. So we had to sit that and got through that. And I basically started as an IFA in Edinburgh the Monday after. I got my certificate the Friday and I had a job lined up. So went across there as an employed financial advisor for a couple of years, learnt the ropes. And then I met David Coleman, who was setting up a company. And it was a self-employed role. So I'm standing there, no really much of a salesman, no client back to speak of, a two-month-old bairn, and then my wife's a part-time hairdresser, so not a big earner, and decided to go self-employed, which is absolute madness.
What brought that? Like, and that is a hard decision to make. Yourself. So what was the drive?
I just thought if I was going to stay in that financial services, the only way to make real money was to be self-employed,
right.
You know, and to give us some sort of security in the future. But then it was just a long, hard slog for many years, you know.
You must
getting
have
a lot of things right, but a lot of things wrong.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, yourself though.
Yeah, and eventually it came to the situation where a lot of people would just slid into the mortgage market because it was easy and mortgages were readily available. Yes. And you could literally get anybody a mortgage if they were willing to pay the interest rate. You know, back in a boy that was bankrupt 3 times and still got a mortgage. So it was nuts, you know. And
those were the days.
And of course, the backside fell out the whole thing, you know. And that was a massive thing. So all those people who had put all their eggs in one basket, because I've always been a believer that you spread your
absolutely.
Risk in anything you do in life, you know.
It's a nugget in itself.
Aye. And so they were all, literally, I think it was April 2008, I was sharing an office with a solicitor up the town, and he had his busiest month in the March. Right. And in April, it just gone, literally. Somebody switched the light off, and that was it. It was gone, you know. Wow. So all those people who'd put all their in the mortgage basket, they were So I'd never done that, and I was mostly what I did was pensions, investments, and a bit of life insurance. So there was a thing in financial services where you would take, you know, it was commission at the time, and you would take front-ended commission. But then the model had to be that to any sustainability, you had to build in a recurring income. That's what everybody wants, really. You know, if you leverage your time and you get this recurring income coming in and you look after your clients. So by the end of it, I had a very good business. I was making very good money. And then out of the blue, I got an offer that I would be stupid to turn down, to be honest.
Right.
And regulation was getting tougher and tougher. It was getting harder, to be honest, you know, and the way the markets were. If you're looking after that amount of people's money and the markets crash, you're like, it's a tough conversation. A lot of tough conversations to be had, which is what I found. I thought, you know, do I want to be doing this?
And you're saying yourself that it was during COVID as well.
Yes.
Came in.
Yeah, it was. It was tough. And because I'm very much a face-to-face person, and I didn't like all that online calls. I thought it was just too artificial. It was, you didn't see the whole picture, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to go and convince the clients it was a good idea to move to this new company who were going to give me a tranche of money for basically for the clients. So it wasn't always successful. I don't think any people regret what actually happened. They're doing well. They're doing fine. They get looked after. But I miss it. You know, I miss the client side of things, the interactions, the face-to-faces. You know, I enjoyed that part of it.
That's a thing you don't think too much about. Not at that stage yet, but... if it's been your life for so long and then suddenly it's gone, you know, what do you do?
I mean, I'm by anybody who knows me and worked with me, I know I'm not a paperwork person, you know. I'm not an admin person. It's my brain's jumped about all over the place. So I think it's a very important in business to know what you're good at. Be self-aware. Mm. And if you're not good at stuff, get somebody else to do it.
Yep, exactly. 100%.
I like to rewind because I think that's the pivoting point when, you know, you were employed back in the day and you just had your wee one.
Aye.
You know, with the family there, you go, oh, that whole, that worry, that concern about taking the leap. But this is where the cusp is with people that decide not to do it. What kind of forced you or what made you go into that? Because you said it was quite a long haul and then you did quite well out of that. But think of somebody starting now, even your daughter, your son ever doing what you did. Yeah. You know, the thoughts, how would you motivate them and how would you get them past that point?
So my daughter actually has had her own business since she was 25, you know, so really I'll be 28 in October. And I think maybe just genetic, you know, it's just like she just decided she wasn't going to be working for other people making them money. She says, I can do the same thing. And so driven. And I just told her, I says, like, in many ways, I was like, get out there and just do it. You know, tough love sort of thing. You'll make mistakes. You'll find it because it's not just about your profession. It's about the business side of things. You've got it's a steep learning curve. You know, you've just got to do it and experience it. So she seems to be doing very well. Quite proud of her, to be honest. You know?
So is it two kids you've got?
Yeah, my son Jack. He's an electrician. Local electrical contractor, Stevie Vaughan. He's different. Eh? He's different, but he's a good lad and he does his job very well. And he's they're both hard workers, and I think that's important these days. You know that you don't get anything for nothing. It's an old cliche, but you've got to put the graft in. You've got to have a certain amount of self belief, and when times go bad, which they often do, you know, a lot of sleepless nights I had. I'll admit, you know, but it just toughens you up, you know.
So you're 100% right. I think people now, I wouldn't say just this generation, seem to be a significant amount of people that just expect now. And we were having a laugh earlier on about AI and then you alluded to the fact, no, I go to the library, I do this and I read the book. Because that's what used to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about that, everything's instant gratification now, so it's so quick. And it's not their fault, this generation. No. They've just got it. But we used to get 10 bob, get the bus, go to the library, speak to the teller, then go and get the book and read it. So you had to seek and find you had to do a bit of a journey.
It's a different journey we were on. And, you know, I don't want to get down on in Gen Z kids and that, because there's a lot of great, great kids. And obviously my kids are of that generation, albeit slightly older. It's just sometimes wish they were just a bit more, you know, they had a bit more about them when things go wrong. Because it's easy just to run and say, you know, the first thing goes wrong in life. But that's just life, you know. And I think the way things were when we were growing up, it was just different. And it was, it was a bit of tough love, and people, parents didn't have the same amount of time because they were, my mum was working as well as having four kids, you know, and my dad, my dad was doing 12-hour shifts and that, just to earn enough to keep the family going, you know, it was different times.
Yeah.
But we always had good, my parents always believed in education for one, which was, they were very supportive and they would keep on top of us with regards to that, which was not the same for everybody where I grew up, you know.
No, exactly.
Obviously. but yeah, it's true. And I've noticed that, you know, that I've worked with a couple of younger people and it just seemed the first running for the hills, you know, the first time something goes wrong. Well, that's just life.
Aye.
In every aspect of life, not just business, personal lives as well.
So alongside your financial business, you've sold that on. And again, I've seen you around the town doing things for Visit Dunfermline. I've seen you with the music industry side of things. I mean, where did you go after you've sold your business?
Well, I'd actually bought Visit Dunfermline as a going concern before I finished up. I was always looking for other stuff as well, because I thought it would be a nice wee hobby to have, and if I could contribute to things that happen in the community, then that's great. That was a noble aim, you know. But I've now got a tiger by the tail.
Right.
And it's trying to control that tiger and steer it in the right direction. You know, what started off just a wee thing to do on the side has now consumed my life. It's full on, because you never get any break from it. I mean, I've got one other person who occasionally contributes to the social media side of things, but other than that, it's myself, you know. And you've got all these platforms and you're trying to do different things with all the different platforms, but it's constantly having to think of content.
Yeah.
So if I go on holiday, I've got to, like 6 o'clock in the morning on holidays, I'll wake up, I'll just do a couple of posts or something, you know. So you never get away from it, which can be a bit tough. Yeah. But
and there's no way of getting a sort of a bank of stuff that can be automated to go out. Gives you that.
I think I'm looking into that AI side of things. Yeah. Where you get your personal assistant or whatever you call them, that could automatically do that. But the thing with social media is you don't want to lose that personal side of things.
Yeah,
you know, it's got to be authentic. It's got to be that my voice speaking off my knowledge of Dunfermline and West Fife. You know, having lived here all my life, and to know your community, to know people, to know what actually interests folk. And most of the time, what I've found is that people are interested by people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they buy into people.
Yeah,
and if I do a post about, you know, Shirley Henderson or something, you know, the actress, brilliant. Oh, I see Shirley in Asda. She's great. You know, she's down to earth. She speaks away and that. You know. And things like that. People love that, you know, and that they always get a lot of traction, those types of posts. And the historical stuff and the nostalgia people. But I don't want to go down that old, because there's lots of people do that already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to solely go down that road, but people, you know, put a Shields Road in Abbey View or something. Oh, well, great times. Remember back in the days? Do you remember the Roberts? Do you remember the all that kind of stuff? Which people love to buy into. So it's building a community. It's really building that foundation and trying to get some civic pride into people.
Mm-hmm.
Because what does the city status mean? What does it mean for Dunfermline? Well, what does it mean? It's just a concept. But it surely has got to change the attitudes. It's the attitudes that have got to change amongst people. So we try to do that, you know. I try to do that on my platform. I try to keep it positive as I can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Dunfermline Press, they can all go there and moan. It's the same folk that put the same stuff every week, you know.
Yeah.
But it's easy to moan, and we know things aren't perfect, but where are they perfect, you know?
And it's trying to get people, because at the moment, everybody leaves Dunfermline to go elsewhere for things. You know, it's always a trip out, but you want people to come to Dunfermline, and it's trying, and that's going to take a long time, but
it's to build on you would that. Be quite surprised though, Michael, because I had a conversation with a politician last week, and he was actually saying when he was out getting his photo opportunities up the high street and that, he was struggling to actually find anybody from Dunfermline, and they were from Kirkcaldy, Glenrothes, Stirling, because Stirling and Perth are struggling now as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we did the Bruce Festival, 20% of attendees were from outside of the Dunfermline area. So we got people from across the Central Belt coming here. And some of the comments were like, oh my goodness, I had no idea this place was so beautiful, you know, down the glen.
And
the weather was gorgeous as well. But, you know, I think it's, we, and I have noticed, and this is just anecdotally, I've no evidence to back this up other than me walking about with my wee sausage dog in the morning and meeting tourists from all over the world, you know, Indians, a lot of Americans, a lot of Canadians.
Right.
And I think the visitor numbers are definitely improving.
I think you take, sorry to interrupt, think you take it, so anybody that's from the Fell, anybody that's from Edinburgh, you take for granted sometimes what's on your doorstep. And I'm picturing that, I'm going back into my memories, the times with the Glen, even as just a wee baby, a young kid, when your mums and dads used to flock there, mainly the mums, flock there in the summer days.
The Badland Pool and all this kind of stuff.
And even now, it's like, we've created memories. Memories are the things that motivate and get the passions striked up again for everybody else. You know, just don't leave it for your memories. Give it to somebody else. Yeah. Give them something else.
I mean, that Glen's is an amazing space, and the whole story behind it as well is incredible. You know, you think about the wee boy who left on Fermon at 12 years old, and it wasn't allowed in the Glen. You know, and then for him to buy it from the Hunt family all those years later and gift it. And Carnegie always said that there was nothing gave him more satisfaction in his entire career or life than that place and being able to gift that to the people of Dunfermline. And we've got custodians of that legacy, you know, and it should be getting used more. It's a wonderful space. I'm doing there probably four times every week, you know, at least. And just... seeing people enjoying the space, but that in terms of events and that, I'm just trying our best to utilise that space and get, you know, things moving on culturally and
So I think you've got I noticed that you had the Bruce Festival, that's something that's kicking off. So you want to explain to our listeners and our viewers about that?
Yeah, that was interesting because it was in existence about 10 years ago, I think, the last one that stopped for whatever reasons. We had various stories about why it stopped. But we thought it was a good idea. And it was a local guy, Frank Connolly, who'd more or less organised it back in the day. Frank did all the heavy work with the Glastonbury Boost Festival. So Frank and I had a conversation. He says, like, but then Frank sort of dropped out. But that time, I had I'd done an article on my Substack page, and it was about a bottom-up approach to politics, you know, just get off your backside and do stuff, basically. Right. And then he started moaning. If you want things to change, be the catalyst for change. And Sandy read the article, and he had just moved to Dunfermline, who's a guy who'd had a successful career in food retail, almost exclusively down south. But his him and his partner's elderly parents lived in this area, so they came up and they chose Dunfermline. He was originally from the Borders and then Edinburgh, but as I said, lived a long time down south. And he wanted to get involved in something, so Sandy came along, and then I went to Angela Connell, who had been organising events in Dunfermline for a long time, an old friend of mine. And so she came aboard, and then John Simpson, who does classical gigs up in the Viewfield Baptist Church. There's a Dunfermline music company, and they'll do quartets, and that string quartets, but just classical and jazz. It's different, you know, and it's good. And we just dovetailed perfectly, you know, the four of us brought something different to the table. And it's a lot of hard work, a lot of graft. Of course, then we had to get the backing from the council and such, like, you know, and the strategic events funds and whatever, where's the pockets of money? Mm-hmm. It's a whole process you've got to go through, which is not exactly delightful. But fortunately, they bought into it, and none of us had ever done anything of that scale before. And it went perfectly. I mean, there was little things you could see here and there, but by and large, and of course the weather as well, was just stunning, which definitely helped. But I mean, that wasn't by accident either, because I always noticed that the weather, the end of May and beginning of June's tends to be less chance of rain. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always everybody thinks the school holidays start and the skies just open up and the peas doing the rain for the next 7 weeks, which actually did last year. So that was great as well, but the feedback was tremendous. And
it was busy. It was good.
Well, we're conservative because we paid for the research for people to actually try and get a handle on the numbers, you know, not just pluck them out of thin air. And, you know, we paid a good bit of money for that. And I think that was beneficial because it gave us the figures to then go moving forward, you know. So this year we're just trying to make it a little bit bigger, a little bit better, a few new features, get it advertise more widely, and take it from being a community event to a national event.
Yep.
That you know, it's important to the national calendar and get folk coming further afield. That's just going to benefit Dunfermline. Now, there's an argument about whether these people actually spend money in the city centre. I've heard folks say they didn't traditionally. Maybe that's just a wee side product, because maybe the whole point of it is to put Dunfermline on the map and to let people see what a gorgeous place it is, you know, and how much rich history we have. And I think we've just always punched below our weight. And of course, being next to Edinburgh doesn't always help, you know. Yeah, it could be shadow, advantageous. Yeah. You always seem to be living in the shadow. I don't want Dunfermline to be a smaller version of Edinburgh. I want Dunfermline to be a bigger version of itself.
Yeah, there's a good place to do that.
Aye. I just thought that one up, by the way. That was
freestyle. I declare as a band.
I need to start getting up early on a Monday morning.
I think, you know what, before you came on, you know, you're more inclined to look at people and what they've done and where they're going and stuff. And even taking business, having that business acumen where you've got that get up and go and that drive, and you were saying it earlier on, you maybe have just... you've been born with it. Your mum, your mother was like that as well.
Uh-huh.
Setting up events and whatnot, and music events. So you've obviously got that. And hopefully your kids have got the same idea as well. Your daughter, Ellie.
Yeah.
So she set up her own business. Do you think that it's constantly helping you motivate? Because obviously this visit Dunfermline, it doesn't just come easy.
No.
There's a lot of obstacles, a lot of walls in the way, and you've got to navigate your way around
it. Yeah, there are, because... I mean, we're just essentially a private company, and I don't think folk understand that. You know, it's a business.
Right.
So I have to make it pay some way. Yeah. There's a lot of different things I have to develop. But, you know, people just think, I think they think they can do more than you can do as well. I get messages all the time, can you sort out this, you know, in the high street? And, well, I'd love to be able to do that. I would love the visitor family to be in that position, but you've got to give other people their... you know, their space as well to do what they're doing, but at the same time we need some direction.
I think that always comes up. We have the books on show, and a lot of it's talking about leadership, strong leadership, whereby the leader's not the boss. The leader's the leader, the one that's taking all the bullets, all the cuts, all the bruises, trying to create the path for everybody behind them to make it easier for them.
Yeah.
So they're finding, they've got the vision and showing everybody, this is the vision, this is what we're going to do, are you all on board or are you not? And I think, you know, I think it's brilliant what you're doing. And I think there'll be a lot of little groups that are doing the same thing. But, you know, scratching the surface, if that collaboration could come together and everybody look after it, right, you deal with the food side of things, you deal with the infrastructure side of things, you deal with the music side of things, and we'll bring that up and we'll keep key markers so everybody knows what target to hit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I do try my best, and I have regular meetings with all parties, you know, whether it be council, whether it be politicians, whether it be businesses, you know. So there's a lot of good people. I've found there's a lot of good people out there doing stuff, which the public are not necessarily aware of, you know, and it's just like a headline grabbing. And, you know, I mean, we all know our high street could be do with a bit of investment, but that doesn't make us any different from anywhere else, you know.
Yeah.
If you go to Prince's Street now in Edinburgh, it's a shadow of what used to be. Sauchie Hall Street's an absolute dump at the moment. So it's not just, you know, it's not the wee satellite towns and cities that are facing these problems across Britain or across the world, effectively.
Yeah.
Retail changes, you know. People moan about shops. But you can guarantee a lot of those, probably the majority of those people moaning about Amazon vans rolling up at their door every couple of days, you know. It's you can't have it both ways.
People it's have the to demise get of the shopping habits so, that people have now.
Yeah, and I think it's more of a leisure type thing and bringing people back into staying in town centres. Which is starting to happen now. A lot of these buildings are just, you know, folk land banking and commercial properties just lying empty.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do anybody any favours, you know.
At all.
So we're finding that there are more people moving in and more cafes and such like that. So people come in and they do a bit of shopping, but they're coming in for multiple reasons. They're not just coming out to do the shop. That just doesn't happen anymore, you know. That's where we've got these big retail parks. And so there's probably a lot more shops than ever were in Dunfermline, but they're just not in the centre.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and there's a lot of conversations going on just now about the city square. What do we do with that? What do we call it? Do we do it? You know, so is that going to go to public consultation? So there's constantly things going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people with the same aim as myself. It's just to bring, and Dunfermline's a pretty affluent place. Have you seen it in the context of Scotland? And another politician told me this, it's one of the wealthiest constituencies. Now you've got dollar added to the mix as well, right enough, in terms of constituencies. But
you're coming with us.
And it's also a very young place as well. So you've had a lot of people coming over, Fernbrough, we all know about the professional people coming in. And I think the pandemic maybe changed things a wee bit for the better, because they could have travelled, so they were actually going, oh, the film was actually all right. We start, rather than just using it as a commuter space, you know, just we live here, we work in Edinburgh, we go out for entertainment in Edinburgh, the film was just where we got a cheaper house.
Yeah.
Bigger, for more, we got more house for our work. Yeah.
Well, you think about Dunfermline, even just getting out, because a lot of people would have got out with COVID going for their walks and going for their runs. You've got Town Hill, Country Park, you've got the woods, you've got, you know, you've got all the woods around here, even going out to Oakley and Wink.
Valleyfield Woods is an amazing space. Yeah. And and that's a lot of what I do with Dunfermline's visual. It's about photographs. I must take 20,000 photographs a year, easy. And nowadays you've got your phone in your pocket.
Exactly.
It's so easy, and you just see, and it doesn't matter how many times you photograph something, every single day is different, the light's different angle, and so I just take photographs all the time to show what a beautiful space we live in, you know. It's phenomenal, and often it takes like people, outsiders, to come into Dunfermline and they'll say, this is a great place, you know. Why wouldn't you live here? You know, you look around, and also it's a bit of a gateway as well, so you know, you're 25 minutes in Edinburgh, you get Glasgow 35 minutes if you drive at certain times of the day, you're up in Dundee in 45 minutes and such like, and up to Pitlochry in an hour, you know, into that sort of different world altogether. So it is a perfect place, I think, and to get out to the East Nuke as well. We need more accommodation, we need better accommodation.
Yeah.
These are all infrastructural things that need to occur. But, you know, I think you start with the culture and you start with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get that right, you know, you've got something to build on from there.
We talk about that a lot in business, whether you've got 4 staff, 5 staff, 1,000 staff, it is really the culture and how everybody's made to feel when everybody's on the page. Yeah. Like, this is what we want, this is what we need, and this is going to best serve us. You know, does it happen in a month? No, it's a longer game.
Well,
but if you can put the plan and emotion and get the backing of everybody that's moving at Dunfermline, people that are living in Dunfermline, people that are from Dunfermline, to push it. I mean, you, I also know of you from your music side. Was it Honk? Honk, aye, you're the singer. You had good stage presence. I remember watching you quite a few times. So, you know,
you've done it. I didn't enjoy my boot as much as I used to enjoy it. See how I had to take on Richard Jobson, he was like, my knees, my back.
So, like, Dunfermline is a well-known place for music. You had Nazareth, you had Big Country, Skids, all these. I mean, am I right in saying that it was Big Country that knocked Thriller off number one? The album.
You may be right. They were huge at the time, and as were Nazareth. I mean, it's easy to forget how big they actually were, you know. So much so that Pete had to take all the bairns across the Isle of Man, I think, because I think the Labour Party put the super tax. It was 95p in the pound at one time, over a certain amount. So it was just, because they were selling albums big time, you know, back then, the early 70s. And then Big Country, but yeah, that's a rich legacy. And you know, at one time, Dunfermline was the place. And there's actually a documentary, it's a Rip It Up, a documentary. I don't know if you've seen that. I think it's called Rip It Up after the Orange Juice song.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Dunfermline at one time was all roads led to Dunfermline, you know, and you had Faith Five for the Rosillos as well. Obviously, Barbara Dixon had a phenomenal career. And it's just a shame that nobody's really brought them through to that level. I think the Draymen were probably the closest.
Draymen were brilliant.
They were really good. A following, it's just whatever reason, it just didn't they get to that next
level. We witnessed a band, my wife and I went to King's Theatre in Kirkcaldy, because it was Mike Clark playing, and a band came on it, and my wife and I both looked at each other and went, fucking hell, it was Moonlight Zoo.
Oh yeah.
So I listened to them, and then we went to PJ Malloy's, and then I think I said to you, and Andy and a few others, and the couples went, I'm driving, I'm going up to Dundee to watch them. So we went up to Dundee, watch him in just a wee grotty bar. And but there's a lot of great musicians around.
Tremendous. I mean,
Laurie McMillan, Ashley, all these really Ashley, great musicians are in Northumberland.
Alan Ferguson, there's great stuff all over Europe.
Yeah.
Dave Bernthal. I mean, they were all obviously playing on Saturday night at the Carnegie Hall after the last waltz. And Kirsten Adamson was there too.
Aye.
She's definitely getting places now as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the talent, the young talent is there, that legacy. Just something about Dunfermline that's always encouraged bands, and I think there's a great example of, you know, we should be concentrating on one aspect of that. You know, there's a movement just now called Media City. They want to turn Dunfermline into Media City.
Right.
There's training courses for, you know, all aspects of the film and TV industry.
Yeah, I'd heard that, actually.
It's looking for spaces, you know. I mean, Robin Cinema would be an ideal space, you know. Enough about that at the moment. But, that would be fantastic. And, you know, there's a lot of... I was one of the speakers at an event in the fire station. There's a lot of people coming in with their ideas and how we could make this work. And obviously working closely with Jim Metcalf at Fife College.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good lad, by the way, Jim.
He is. I've had
a curry with him a few weeks ago, and we sat and chewed the fat for 2 hours and spoke about, you know, how we can connect things up with regards to the college, because I think that is a massive game changer. But he's very conscious that, because it's got, 9 full-size football pitches, 2 international basketball courts, 4 restaurants, 2 cafes.
Yeah, it's massive.
That. Huge place. Space for 5,000 outside. You could do an event there. But he said, but he's also wanting to help the city centre. So how do we connect all that?
Right, okay.
Because he's very conscious that it's, you know, they just wanted everything to be on the outskirts.
On the outside, the rural city thing. Well, rural-ish. Yeah.
But, I mean, working with all these bodies, big part of what I try to do, you know, it's just bring people together.
Well, when you bring people together, a lot of it comes from music as well, and getting off their arse. And
it's a camaraderie, as you say. We've known each other since it was music that I first met yourself, you know. I still do that Leroy Day, by the way. This is going to be 30 years this year.
That's brilliant.
And you know, that's been a wee fun event, just an example of, you know, what can happen. And it's that legacy. I had a kid, 13-year-old, playing last year. I mean, it's been 30 years, you know. It's just, and you've got the kids of certain people in certain bands. They're all playing now, so it's like almost like a family. This year's it's mental, you know. Like the old guy, Thigh Smoking, are going to be playing, and it's just getting bands from 30 years ago and getting back together. And I think it's magic. And what we did was we kept the guy's spirit alive, I suppose, because he was just loved his music. And but it's a bit more than just him now. It's the event itself is a thing, you know. And we call it Leroy Day because it's a nod to him. Mm-hmm. But I mean, 30 years, it's incredible, really. When it just started off in somewhere else with an idea and a madness, chaos, you know. 12 bands in somewhere else on a Sunday. It was just nuts. You know, folk try to get the bar and the boy stand with his bass.
Of course, it's not the biggest, pub in the world.
And it was like, it's a shame it's become so bloody organised now, because I remember one year they didn't even have a venue on a Saturday. It was the next day.
Right?
I come back from holiday and I went around the mountains again in the hill, and I said to the boy, you know, fancy having a wee music event here tomorrow. I didn't even have a PA. Fortunately, Tam Sigler came good on that respect. And it was the busiest day they'd ever had.
Wow.
It was mobbed.
I think it's now when people are capturing the day that they're having, and that's where the value comes in, is stretched over the multimedia platforms, where it's just like snap, snap, video, 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 I was here today. It's capturing it so you can create more of the publicity as well. But as you say, again, a youngster, 13-year-old, come up and singing, the confidence, the memories that you've gave him just for that alone. And, you know, adults, parents, they'll go, bring your kid along. Bring your kid along. Get interactive in the community spirit and do something that are a wee bit more uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not drinking, though.
Next generation brings them along.
Of course, yeah.
So it doesn't just all fade.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That legacy has endured over the years, you know, and long may it continue. It's quite astonishing, some of the talent that's there, actually. The, you know, young Alfie Ramage and that, what's he in, play guitar, you know, Lewis Munker, great vocalist and musician, you know, they're there, and they just keep coming through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've got obviously Loop Maniac along the road there. You've got,
yeah, Liam,
you've
got
Wee Toasty Studios up in the Abbey Park Place.
Is that is that the attic space?
It's a whole building he's got. It's just where the old Citizens Advice used to be, I think.
All right, okay.
It's the start of Abbey Park Place, across the Abbey.
All right, I know where you are.
Lorenzo's in there, a couple of buildings in.
Right.
He's got it all right for the
that's brilliant.
I think it's quite a sizey place, actually. Because one of the things we struggled for back in the day was rehearsal space. I remember we there was a company called, it was a precursor to Bubbles, it was WE Kitchens and Bathrooms. Big Dicey and Snowy White had that in the, you know, the pub. He says, well, can I get any practice? He says, well, come down in. So basically I had to go and set up every single practice and move baths about and everything in their warehouse, you know, bathroom and kitchen place.
That was so difficult.
It was hard.
Tell you a funny story. I remember, because I was young, I liked music, but I didn't know everything about music. I remember we were recording, we used to use Sinkies upstairs, and I remember going in and there was folk playing. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, man, I need to get a P8, and I didn't know at the time, but it was Nazareth, and I was like, you fucking old bastards, come on, I need to get here. Steve the guitarist, he went, shut the fuck up. I went, who are they like? But that was the time, you know, I just never knew. But I was like, and they spent time with us, and you go, they told you their story, and you're like, you know, it was jaw-dropping.
Nah, no.
And then they spent time with you.
Yeah, I took a young band up there one day. They were just hanging about. I said, you wake up, meet Nazareth. They were a metal band, heavy band.
Aye.
You know? I think they were called Too Much To You. And so went up, and Danny Pete came along and started telling stories, you know, and the other guys were like, the one about Leonard Skinner, and they didn't get on the plane because they were at a party the night before, and they said the pilot was pissed, so we didn't get on it. And she's near Ramy Petal and ends up in the Everglades, and Artemis Pyle, the drummer, the big guy, he gets up and ties folk to trees that were still alive and looked for were dead, and then ran through the Everglades to get help, and she basically ran a marathon, and then some guy came out and started shooting at him with a shack, you know. This can't be true. It's all true, really. You check up the facts.
My God,
But yeah, they lived a life, and it's a fantastic to hear the stories, but
it is, and I think again for youngsters as well, and people my age as well, because I'm still quite young.
Right.
But it's memories. Right. It's memories, and you know, there's still loads and loads of memories for Dunfermline and people that want to remain here and create something of value. Yeah. And it does need, you know, what you do it with the help of the people around you. You know, if we can help you in some way, push that message forward.
That'd be great.
And person ourselves.
I mean, I suppose we're looking. Like, these events aren't cheap to put on.
Mm-hmm.
The Bruce Festival, for instance, you know, and the way the nature of the Glen, it'd be very difficult to charge. We don't want to charge anyway. Part of the thing is it's a free event. And, all right, the food trucks now maybe a wee bit more expensive, but that's always the case. And, yep. And if you don't want to buy that, bring a picnic, you know. It's So it's a free event, and but there's no sort of long-term strategy for these events, you know. It's something like yourself. So every year you go back with a begging bowl, as it were. You know, right. You go. But it's a great way. With our platform, we can give people exposure. So if people want to, you know, sponsorship deals, and that could be at any level. You know,
yeah.
We're not precious about that. You know, if it's £500, if it's £2,500, perfect. If it's more, people want to sponsor, get their name out there, and contribute to a fantastic community event, then. That my door's always open, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, just working with other businesses is great. Because I think often there's that disconnect between business and the politics and, you know, the council, you know, who's speaking to each other here.
Yeah.
And we're all in the same boat and we're all trying to do the same thing and improve our community. And move things forward, you know, and create opportunities, and create a great place to live and work.
Yeah. Really.
And where do they find you, Billy? Where's the easiest place to get you?
My email is just billy@visitdunfermline.com.
Nice and easy.
Or message me through Facebook or the Visit Dunfermline page or my own Facebook or whatever. These days, there's Number of ways to get in touch with people. Right. It's not like the old days.
You can't walk. Your dog see on the Glen, you'll be there four times a week. Sausage dog.
I remember the boy coming out of somewhere else with the first being the big Nokia's a big brick. First man, he's the first guy. He's shouting at the bar, "These are amazing. This doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing. Somebody to get in touch with." And there was not one single guy in the bar thought that was a good idea. Like,
because it's not.
It is. And how everything's changed now. You could be on the other side of the world. I mean, can you imagine 30 years ago they'll say, "Listen, what? You could talk to somebody on the other side of the world on a camera sort of thing." And they're like,
it cost a fortune. Because I was in America 1988, and when I come back, it was folk I wanted to get in touch with. And one girl in particular, it was at Syracuse University. It was some of her friends were on the Lockerbie disaster.
Oh, right, okay.
I remember phoning her up. It was an absolute fortune. Aye. To do just to speak on a phone, eh?
It's incredible how technology has grown. And now you're just, I think it's just down to the imagination now. You know, you talk about going to Mars and all the other places. Everybody has more truck with that and going,
No worries. The speed of change now is phenomenal. It's exponential, eh? For an old guy like me, I try to keep tabs with it all, and particularly the AI stuff. I find it fascinating, scary, but endlessly fascinating. The possibilities, as with everything with human beings, there's a great potential for good, but there's also a great potential for harm.
It's a zero.
It's up to us what road we go down. You know, if you look at the internet, it's been phenomenal success, but this is a new internet times 10. What's coming along just now with AI is mind-boggling. You know.
But nothing, back to what you said earlier on, nothing beats that whole face-to-face.
Oh, exactly.
That conversation.
It's still going to be about people, but there'll be a lot of soul-searching for humanity in the next 5-10 years and beyond. I mean, you know, how many jobs are going to go?
Mm-hmm.
How do we then, you know, because at the moment the rich are getting richer. And how do we just make sure it's a fairer world?
Because
there's enough money and resources for everybody just to have a good life. That's just the way capitalism or human beings work, unfortunately. You know, we're all part of that capitalist machine, but there's got to have a conscience. Eh? It's got to have a good
side. I think what happens is that it always has to, and it's not done in a negative way. It's just more when I look at things in a logical way and a business way, and go, it climbs, and then it goes, and it resets, and everything resets. It's just whether or not it resets and shoots off a different way. And I think it has, you know, you look, COVID has happened, so the rural community built up more people. That's why house prices went up in the rural community. And then that's withdrawn from here. But now it's slowly coming back because people missed the internet. I mean, how massive, you just look at turnover, you look at profitability in businesses after COVID, it just shot up because people missed it for so long. And now it's kind of,
plateaued.
So it's just creating the new thing, and getting the juices flowing for people.
I think that human beings can be resistant to change, and folk don't necessarily like change, you know. But I love it. I think it's great. It just keeps things, you know, keeps going. It keeps that motivation. It keeps that intrigue and that sense of surprise and excitement about what's possible. You know, what's possible, but. So that's just me. I just maybe drink too much Kool-Aid. I don't know.
Is politics something that you'd be interested in?
I've never been a partisan person in terms of like joining a party or anything like that. I think some of my political views were well known 11 years ago. But however, that's what it is. I couldn't see me. It's a dirty game, I think. I in a sense, I am involved in politics, and I quite like it. I'm politics for my company and Dunfermline's sake, but not for any big idealistic notion. I think all parties, politicians are basically good people. I don't like the bad press that they get. There's a lot of reasons for that, but at the ground level, most people go into politics for the right reasons, and they want to do. Make change. Thanks. I want to do stuff, but it's they're certainly not the favoured profession in this world just now. And I think on a bigger scale, but it's all these sound bites and internet doesn't help, you know. And if you get these toxic platforms where people are just allowed to say anything now,
take things out of context completely. With
absolutely, So I speak to people of all parties, and I take them as human beings and on a face level. What are they doing? Are they doing a good job? Can they do anything for me? Can I do anything for them? And then we'll find, but we'll see you.
I think you can't do right by doing wrong.
Nah.
You know, we spoke about it, and Vicky spoke about it. You know, you've got 10 million, but you need the roads, or you need to help disability cause, or you need to do education. You go, but I've only got this pot of money. I think if everybody, in my opinion, if you get the platform long enough without all the sound bites, to dumb it right down and let a politician, let anybody just be totally honest, the full truth and nothing but the truth. This is what I've got. You tell me what to do. My job is to try and make it as best as possible. But that's why you have people that hate you, people that like you, people that dislike you. It's a thankless task sometimes.
I think maybe there's not enough politicians who've had experience, real experience of business.
That's the problem, I think.
Yeah, are they out of touch with, you know, and if, when I was involved with Fire Station Creative, I mean, it was five people there for more or less private business, like Kit McBay, you know, Sound Control, Guitar. And we got things done. Okay. We did that place up for less than 200 grand, and the council couldn't believe it, you know. They were like,
that's we're
much over budget, you know, and that's been a great asset. Tatum Filming, we had that vision, but it wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 5 years at least to even secure the place, and then
wow.
That's the difference with our kind of entrepreneurial mindset is that, you know, you've got all these challenges, you're just finding solutions, constantly finding solutions, whereas politicians that have not got that experience, it's just a different game, and it's easy to throw money at things when it's not going right.
Are you throwing money in the right direction? Exactly. That's a massive question, and the film has to answer, you know, because
I think
I'm
not
going to get too controversial this morning, guys, but you know, it's frustrating when you're somebody like myself wanting to, and you know, you could do if you just got a wee fair slice of the pie, but hey ho, we'll see what happens. All I can do is do my best for Visitor Filming and keep putting on quality events that are well run, well organised, and well attended. And then we'll see what comes for that, you know.
I think it's the validation. Think it's the validation because everybody wants the recognition for doing something right. And I'm not decrying politicians, they've got a hard job to do. And we can all say, well, I want that because I'm trying to do good. They've maybe got four or five different people coming to them with something that's going to be possibly quite good.
Yeah.
But they need to evaluate, where's this person been in the journey? What credentials have they got? And if I give them that 500,000 or that £1 million, out of the 5 or 10 people that are coming here, I have the key metric. I have to score these people on the basis of their background. Who's going to actually use that for good? Because I know a lot of people have got it and just wasted it.
Yeah.
And there's no audit and trail.
You hit the nail on the head because it's about accountability, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if there's no accountability,
Once you lose that, you've lost it all. And I think that's, you've probably analysed that absolutely brilliantly, just quick. And that's the thing, there's a lot of people trying to do good, but there's a lot of people saying they want to do good and they don't know exactly the roadmap of how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people need to be really aware. It's like any investor in business, entrepreneur. We've invested in business, I've invested in business, but I'm looking at the person. I look at the business model, the P&L and all that, but I actually look at the person that's driving it. Mm. You look at guys like Alan Sugar or Sir Lord, whatever his name is now. he invested in people because he's seen that they weren't brilliant at this and that and selling, but they were very good, innovative. They had a creative flair about them. But he knew he'd back them because he had people in the right place. It's now like guys like yourself, guys similar to you. Have you got that flair? Have you got that drive? I mean, you've already told about your business journey and the walls that you've knocked in. How many people are they giving that money to that have not done what you've done? And it's not to decry them as a personality, but they should never be up there.
No.
You should be in the line first because you've got the credentials.
We need young entrepreneurs to come through. We need the next generation.
No, we're trying our best on that front.
Yeah.
There's
another guy, I'll, after the podcast, I'll tell you about, who did good work in schools as well with entrepreneurs. Maybe good idea to get him on here.
Absolutely.
As well.
You're doing a grand job, sir. Keep it up.
Thanks very much, guys. Worthwhile getting out of bed, I think.
That's brilliant. It's good for us. Considering we didn't know what the hell we're going to talk about.
I think that's all off the best way. I think it's better just let these things flow, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I've been one of you scripted and it's not the same.
Well, we've done it before. When we first started this as a business, we thought, we'll try it. It's not sounding the same. And then we thought, fuck it, just be authentic. And I think that's where the real magic happens. When you are authentic and you trip yourself up, you correct yourself again. again and move, keep moving forward. But we wish you all the best with the Bruce Festival.
If anybody has looked to get some sponsorship going, yeah, definitely get in touch.
We'd be delighted to speak to you. There's, we can, it's not a one-way street. You do sponsorship, you'll get advertising, and you'll get all the publicity that you deserve.
Thanks. And it's the collaboration with everybody that you know. You know, giving you something good. You know, you'll be linked to me yourself. But we always finish the podcast on a lovely strap line. Michael, do you know it?
I know it.
I know
it. I brought it to the table.
Did you? This is your world. Shape it or someone else will.